right, so.
Ladies and gentlemen!
Oh, God. We're in so much trouble. You know what, I'm just going to let it go.
30 seconds in, Jen has snorted already.
I'm not. It's a lie.
So, this is a crossover episode between Don't Read the Latin and Fanboy News Network. I am Jeff Harris, host of Fanboy News Network.
Hi, I'm Michael Montour, one of the two co-hosts of Don't Read the Latin.
I'm Jennifer Lovely, the other co-host.
And just right off the bat, I'm going to let the audience know, if you hear a fan in the background, it's really freaking hot where we are. We love you, but we don't feel like suffering for you.
Exactly. This time we are putting the fan in Fanboy News Network.
Yay! So, this is going to be a little freewheeling because we were talking about Guardians of the Galaxy before I hit record, and Jen's like, we're wasting good conversation!
I'm pretty sure Guardians of the Galaxy isn't a horror movie, but I haven't seen it, so I could be mistaken.
It's not, although I have heard rumblings that when they make Doctor Strange, they want to make that Marvel's horror movie. That's the rumbling that they...
Is there a director attached to that yet?
I would have to look it up. Okay. I know they have just this week secured all the internet domains necessary to do it. It's definitely happening. One of the things with Marvel is they've always said, we are doing superhero movies, quotation marks, but each one is actually a different genre.
Yeah.
I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy was the space opera, Winter Soldier was the spy thriller.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are hinting that Doctor Strange will basically be the Marvel horror movie. What would it lend to it?
I was talking to someone last night who's holding out for a Man-Thing movie, and I'm like, I hope you can learn one at this point, because I don't think we're...
Man-Thing is one of the characters not actually owned by Marvel for movie rights.
Right? Oh, really?
They sold it off to another company. They might be on the verge of getting it back.
Oh, wait, yeah, there was, like, some direct-to-video horrible-looking...
It ended up on Sci-Fi Channel, yeah.
Yeah,
One of the movies where the rights got bought out during the bankruptcy, but the fact that there was only that one crappy movie,
right. You
don't know when the rights will revert back. I mean, Marvel's gotten rights back to a lot of characters that did have movies.
True.
They've gotten rights back to Blade now, they've gotten right back to Daredevil, and they got rights back to, of all things, Howard the Duck.
My name is Jennifer, and I have nothing to contribute here.
So,
you know who Swamp Thing is?
Yes.
Man-Thing is like the Marvel equivalent of that. And the two characters both kind of arose at about the same time.
They didn't reach out very far for
that. No, that's what's weird, is both of them came out at about the same time. This keeps happening. It's like X-Men and the Doom Patrol.
It's zeitgeist, really.
Yeah.
Well, it's like movies like Deep Impact and Armageddon have the same thing.
Yeah. So I know practically nothing about Man. I know a lot about Swamp Thing. I know practically nothing about Man Thing, but I've always loved the one phrase that's associated with him, is that whatever knows fear burns at the Man Thing's touch. That has just been this, like, you know, old radio sounding phrase that has just stayed with me.
And I'm enough of a comic nerd, I could get into deep cut detail about Man Thing, but I won't.
Yeah.
Because your eyes will just glaze over at some point. It'll be blah 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 Man Thing, blah 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 Swamp, and blah 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 Nexus of Realities. And that's where we're. So the reason the three of us decided to get together today is it's August.
It's August. Let's do that mid year review on all the good stuff of 2014 so far.
I imagine we'll come back in January and do a full year recap, but
let's talk about
what we've seen so far.
I think
far.
We did it too early last year, and I think it was just because we were all getting the idea of doing these, but I think we missed out on a couple of movies that I would have really liked to have included. I know I saw either The Battery or Resolution before we did our, like, literally our top for the year.
Right. You were talking about Battery when we did that.
Okay,
first
so it's Resolution I hadn't seen yet. But it would have been in my top three had we done that. And then also, so I do want to talk about a couple of movies that I saw that don't really qualify in the 2014 discussion. But I'm also giving an honorary mention to a December 12th movie that came out that's horror. Kind of pushing it in because I didn't watch it until after 2014.
It was still in theaters in 2014, right?
I don't think it...
December is always that nebulous zone for year-end reviews.
It was kind of that... it's the video on demand. So I don't even know. I doubt it got a theatrical, but Anyhow, so the stuff that I have seen recently was, and I'm pretty much going to stay horror, because, you know, I'm not going to do Jen's documentary corner. oh, wait, no, I am! Except it is actually going to be a horror bin.
It's so, Jen's documentary corner.
I saw The Nightmare Factory, which was...
Oh, yeah, I want to see that.
It's, oh, it's really, really good. Yeah, and it's on Netflix streaming.
It's like the makeup-focused one.
It is, yeah. It is. And it's the guys who did Evil Dead 2.
Nice.
And they are the ones who are kind of leading the way for everything practical.
Oh.
And there was a big sad conversation at the end of it. They're like, we don't know who our torch is going to be passed to.
Yeah, which reminds me, did you hear Dick Smith die?
Yeah.
That really.
So it's So that it's really, really good. It's on Netflix. Yeah, it's all right. We'll get back up. The other, so I saw The Stepfather finally from the 80s.
Okay, the original.
The original. No, I haven't watched the remake. But it holds up really, really well. It was genuinely creepy. I liked everybody acting it. It had Locke from Lost.
Terry O'Quinn.
Terry O'Quinn.
That was the thing that first brought him to people's attention. It's what brought him to the show. Everything he has done since.
He was really good. He was really scary.
That's why people hire him now. They remember him. Oh, he was really great in those Stepfather movies.
Yeah, and then I also saw, wasn't he, had a really tiny part in Earth 2, that sci-fi in the 90s.
I loved Earth
2.
Yeah.
What else? I don't remember what else. But anyway, that was pretty good, and it held up really well. I saw Final Destination 5, because I tried to watch another one, I think 4, perhaps, and it was just atrocious, and I heard somebody say that 5 was actually pretty good.
I stopped at 4 because that's one of my flip the table movies.
Yeah.
I got 10 minutes into it and was like, this is not how I want to be spending my brief mortal existence.
Yeah, that was my there was a Resident Evil one where there was no plot, it was just fight scenes. It was like watching somebody play a game, and I can't remember the number of it, but I was just, I'm done. There's no story.
Well, and that's kind of the problem with some of these, where especially where you start going, are they churning out one a year? That's when I start getting, they kind of started doing that with Nightmare on Elm Street. And the reason those stayed watchable was Robert Englund.
Yeah. I really like the, oh my goodness, why can't I remember that New Nightmare, where they kind of rebooted the...
New Nightmare was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. not the remake, but the meta.
Wes Craven's New Nightmare.
Yeah. Yes.
That was a...
It was really good.
It
was a fresh idea, and it was really entertaining, and I like all of the actors well enough.
I've seen similar things done in other movies, and so I'd say it was about 5 years ahead of its time.
It really was.
Just in terms of the meta narrative that it was doing.
In Midland Decency, I saw Splinter, which was really interesting. It was another kind of independent. It was a...
I think I've heard of this one.
It's really neat. It's, you know, kind of a virus, kind of a parasite.
A virusite. If you will, or if you won't.
But, it kind of has... Watch the trailer for it. It's interesting. Okay. It was decent. It wasn't wonderful. And my other decent, it wasn't wonderful, was The Last Winter. Which was kind of an eco-horror of kind of global warming-esque, where they're in the Arctic and they're doing it on oil, and it's kind of wonky. It's got, Hellboy. It's got
Ron Perlman?
It's got Ron Perlman in it, which, you know, is sometimes good and sometimes not. He likes working.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's where...
He and Walken and Ice Cube, man, they like getting a paycheck. Ice Tea.
Why have those three not been in the same movie yet?
I know. It's probably upcoming.
You know who else likes to will do just about anything if you ask? It was Henry Rollins. The reason I'm thinking of that right now is I just, this week, finally got into watching Sons of Anarchy.
You know what, though? I have heard so many people just... seeing that show's praises, but...
Well, I decided to start watching it, and Ron Perlman's one of the stars, and one of the reoccurrings in second season was Henry Rollins.
Yeah.
The whole reason I bring that up at all is, but watching Sons of Anarchy, it's like, of course you hire Ron Perlman for this. He's the exact right actor.
Yeah.
But the thing there is his co-star is Charlie Hunnam, who ended up being the lead in Pacific Rim.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and I swear Guillermo del Toro first saw him because he was watching Sons of Anarchy because Ron was on it. But I like that guy.
Yeah. So that's it for me. Have you seen anything recently, Jeff, that you just want to sing the praises of?
Well, I don't know about sing the praises of, but I'm curious, was when did Marked Ones come out?
That's this year.
Yeah, that was this year. This year. It's one of the ones I was going to talk about.
Well, because one of the things I was mentioning to Michael when we were sitting down is I realized I haven't seen a lot of horror movies in the theater. And part of that is I prefer watching horror movies in more intimate settings.
Yeah.
I like when we get together on Friday nights and we're watching horror, I like that.
I am totally good with either. What, if I am going to see it in the theater, what I really want is to go see a preview screening.
Yeah.
Because then that's normally an audience who's invested. Yeah, exactly. In seeing
I
this.
I really do not like the other people in the theater. I've seen more movies with you in the theater than... I don't like the theater-going experience. I don't like crowds. I don't like other people.
Sadly, my best... Yeah. She doesn't mean you, listeners. She
might.
I don't know who's listening. Anyway, my best, horror movie-going experiences in the theater have not been with you. It's been the main one that I can remember was when I saw the first Paranormal Activity in the theater. That audience was freaking terrified.
Yeah.
And also... very amused with themselves for being terrified. Oh, yeah. So they're just scream, laugh.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. Yeah. So being part of that energy is kind of,
if I can get past the theater going experience and the teenagers on their cell phones. And,
Well, this is why,
the conversations going on behind the person with their child in the horror movie.
Here's a special shout out to the mother who brought her, 4-year-old
to Oculus. Yeah.
You're an idiot. Don't bring it anymore.
Now you know why I go to Cinnabar almost exclusively.
Oh.
Yeah.
That is
a good experience.
For those of you who don't have anything like this in your area, Cinnabar is a movie theater that also has a full-service bar and restaurant. Like and because of Washington State law, no one under 21 is allowed on the premises. Oh. So I go there.
That might be my new favorite theater.
Yeah, seriously.
Because A, no one under 21 in the theater. I'm not going to have to deal with that. B, because they make all their money off of the bar and the restaurant, they don't have to show commercials, so they show short films.
Nice.
And sometimes
they see
some really cool short films, including if you're watching a horror movie there, the front load short might be a horror movie. Oh. I've seen some cool stuff there.
There are some really good shorts out there.
Right? Yeah.
There's a lot of people who are trying to get their start who are making shorts as that, please give me a job.
Yeah, that's your new resume. That's your new calling card.
It really is. Make your own movie and distribute yourself.
Yeah,
you can
go out, make a short film these days, get noticed by Hollywood, and they'll give you a ton of money to make a really feature length version of it.
Well,
I'm not thinking of anything specific here except possibly for Mama.
Yeah.
That was sad.
It was sad. Because the original short is just so terrifying. Yeah.
But I think also it's a case of the story worked great in short form. It'd be like one of the most effective horror shorts to me I saw is still Bedfellow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's 2 minutes.
You can't make a feature length version of that.
No, that's a quick one done, or the lights out one.
Yeah.
I can't think of the title of it, but the one where a figure keeps appearing when the lights are turned down.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That works as it's a bite. But it's great. Quick
four. The first time I saw that was not on a monitor with the right settings, so when the lights went out, I saw nothing at all, and I'm like, I don't understand what people are enjoying about this story. And then, once it went on, I figured out what was happening, but I still couldn't see it.
Yeah.
No, I saw it later on a different computer entirely, and was like, oh, okay, that is, that's not okay.
All right, I'm going to dive in really, really fast, because I want to mention my honorable mention. Again, this is a December 2013, so it doesn't officially, but it didn't get mentioned in my top. I think it probably would have... I really like this. Okay, it is called Banshee Chapter.
Oh, yeah.
And I really love this. It's very... it was written and directed by Blair Erickson. And it's kind of a take on the whole Kim Kesey experience, where he was part of a governmental experiment on LSD. Back in the 60s when he was still a college student and he was the one who basically took it and decided to share his experience with the world and share LSD with a lot of people. But it's kind of a Ken Kesey, Hunter S. Thompson kind of conspiracy story of something being used as a governmental testing, it getting out there, getting shared by people, and hijinks ensuing. But it's really, really creepy. It's got, I can't remember his name. He's the one who played Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs.
He's got that voice.
Oh, yeah. No, I can't remember his name.
But he's really good. And he plays kind of, he is the basic Hunter S. Thompson in the movie.
Yeah.
But it's really creepy. It was video on demand.
He was my favorite thing about the movie.
He was really good. I actually really like the music, too. And it's just creepy. Oh, and it has the radio signals.
The number stations.
Yeah. The thing about the number stations. And one of the creepiest instances was they're like, how did you make that? They're like, it's an actual number station, and we just recorded it and used it. And you never know who makes those or where they come from. They don't really have to credit anybody for it. And it is so creepy. It is just creepy. And I really liked it.
Jen keeps, when this comes up in conversation, Jen keeps remembering that I didn't like it. And that's not actually true. I just didn't like it as much as she did. She really loved it. I thought it was really good and had some great things in it, but overall I just thought it was uneven.
Yeah.
You know, so it didn't ever quite add up to a movie
to me.
But I enjoyed it, and I think it's worth watching. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's kind of like when we were discussing The Uninvited Guest, where I was like, it was just kind of lacking something. Do you think I should see it? Yes!
Yeah.
Because, you know, sometimes there's just stuff out there that, you know, I mean, it's really well done. And it might have some parts where it's not as well done, but...
Well, there are movies where I've seen them where, you know, this is not the greatest movie, but it had good elements.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it's...
And, you know, honestly, I'd rather watch that than a nice, even, solidly constructed movie that's just boring and doesn't have anything original in it. So.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, actually thinking of this recently. We were talking about Cinnabar a few minutes ago, and the first movie I ever saw there was Legion.
Oh, okay.
The Angel movie.
I haven't watched that, and I've heard terrible things.
And it's not great, but there was one actor in there. I've actually, based on this movie and some other stuff he's done, I've kind of become a little bit of a fan of his. His name is Kevin Durand. And he's a big guy. He's like 6'6". If you saw the Wolverine Origins movie, he played Blob. But
I'm not seeing it, but I think I know who you're talking about.
And I'd seen him in some other things. He always was doing bit parts. He was usually playing heavies because, again, he's 6'6".
Yeah.
I'm watching this movie, and Paul Bettany is clearly there because there's a mortgage payment due. Other actors are in there because they're young and they like credit.
Jennifer Connelly just had a baby.
Yeah.
But then really? I didn't know they were married.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay. Yeah. All
right. Making probably amazingly beautiful children.
But Kevin Durand was in it, and he was... He was like third act. He was like final boss. He was the villain. It's an Angel movie. Bettany was playing Michael, and Durand was playing Gabriel. And I'm watching Gabriel do this performance. I'm like, you're like the only person that showed up at the set giving, you know what? I give a damn.
Yeah. Let's do this.
You're the only one actually trying to put in a decent performance. And it was that moment of, in this somewhat mediocre movie, he is standing out for, you know, putting in an effort, coming out of the set and going, I don't care what the rest of you are doing. I'm a professional. And the reason this comes full circle is, and I want to talk about some of the TV lore that I've been watching. The new show, The Strain. Kevin Durand's one of the main characters.
Yeah.
He's one of the main
Everything's
characters.
Everything's on my TiVo, just waiting for me.
And it's another case I'm watching going, so this is what you're like when you're in a show with other people to give a damn.
Because
he's doing a good job.
Yeah.
He's got good material, and it's fun to watch that.
What always really fascinates me is when there's some movie where, you know, I can't imagine looking at this script and thinking, yes, let's do this, but everyone did. And the main example I'm thinking of off the top of my head here is the 13 Ghosts remake.
I love that movie so much!
It's so good! Everybody brings their A-game, except it was, you know, maybe so not the scriptwriter, you know? But everything in it is so good. The production design is good, the acting is good, the dialogue is... Well delivered.
The backstory on all of the ghosts is divine.
That's true.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, if you guys are out there and you've got the 13 Ghosts DVD and you've never watched the special features, for God's sake, watch the special features. They're really so worth it.
That and Ghost Ship are the same director, and they're just a lot of fun. They're not perfect. I think the guy does a lot of commercial work and has stopped entirely doing any kind of film. But 13 Ghosts and Ghost Ship are a lot of fun. Ghost Ship, it's not a great movie, but I give it
but
a pass.
But has an amazing opening sequence.
The opening is amazing. Oh my God. Literally, like, I hate it when people are like, what's the best death? Because I don't watch horror movies for their gore.
But this time.
But it's really impressive.
It is epic.
They kill in an amazingly impressive way.
That's my thing, the Christian Bale line towards the end of American Psycho, where he's on the phone going, I had to kill a lot of people! what the hell did I just put my hands up? Jen, what is this?
It's a child toy.
Things
go squish.
It's a squishy child toy.
I just put my hand on something squishy and nubbly and possibly alien in origin. So.
Ladies and gentlemen, we now have a squishy toy on our podcast.
Squish!
Because there is a five-year-old in the house.
There's a child who lives here. Because of that, there's weird.
One day could show up on the podcast just spontaneously.
Well, that has happened before, but it got edited out.
Yeah. My kid ended up on
the
internet.
So,
but we should go back to the marked ones.
Yes, we were talking about the marked one, or as we like to call it, teenagers making bad decisions.
Yeah.
I think we said that enough units so no one actually heard the phrase. Go ahead.
Let's watch teenagers make bad decisions.
Yes. Or, in other words, teenagers.
Teenagers.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's one of the main things that we love about it, the teenagers. You know how you hate it when characters in a horror movie are stupid? These characters were realistically stupid. Yeah. They did stupid things that you can imagine a teenager doing. You can look at and think, yeah, I probably would have done that at that age.
Well, and then they're sometimes like, how in the hell did you get from A to Z? And they're like, well, we need to get from A to Z, so we're going to have this person do this completely implausible thing to, you know, push the plot forward. And they just seem like teenagers acting like kids, and the acting was good. My only real complaint, and it kind of made me make the ugh noise when we talked about it in our thing. I'm making noises. Stop it. Jeff's watching me back thing.
Make mouth noises that are words, Jen.
I'm not judging. Okay. You've met my sister. You've seen the amount of fidget she does.
Yeah.
That's true.
I am inoculated.
Yeah. My only complaint is the believability of why they're filming is really just dead in the water. And
starts out kind of okay, and then they stop bothering.
What frustrates me is the mythology that they are presenting with the Paranormal Activity series is getting really, really interesting.
Yeah.
And I feel like we are losing what is potentially a really good story by a concept that is hogtying it and not allowing it to really work as well as it
could. They need to abandon found footage.
Yes.
We had this discussion when we watched it, and it's the movie that Michael and I like that you don't, Chronicle.
Yeah.
That it's not a horror movie, but it's that found footage superhero movie.
Yeah.
But at least within it, it's the only time I've ever had it presented a logical reason why it's happening, that they presented it as a mania that the one character was having. Plus, in that movie, since he had telekinesis, he could be in the shots because he was
living. And still have the camera, yeah.
Well, I
think the first Paranormal Activity had a really justifiable reason for having cameras running. They set up security cameras, like, there's something strange going on, let's try to catch it on film. And then you don't have characters filming.
Yeah.
You know, so you don't have to think, why is this guy not dropping the camera and running? It's because there's stationary cameras. It made sense.
The thing is, what also frustrates me is that I liked one of my favorite things with The Rise of Leslie Vernon is at a point where they decided they were going to stop filming, it stopped being a found footage movie, and they did it in a really clean way that I thought really worked. But I have literally seen the complaint on message boards where they're like, be a found footage movie or don't be a found footage movie. This, like, fluttering back and forth between the two.
I don't know if I want to see that done a lot, honestly.
Yeah.
Rise of Leslie Vernon pulled it off really, really,
really well.
Well, it created a great dichotomy because it changed filming styles, too.
It really did.
It went from found footage, the saturation of a found footage, to the color saturations of a standard slasher film.
Yeah.
Plus, the moment it stopped found footage filming, it was total slasher film rules, including Leslie, who was a chatterbox in the found footage sections, never spoke again. At all.
I think he's right.
He never did.
I think he
became a total
even
slasher
in his
character.
Death scene? I'm trying to remember. Did he not have any final?
I thought he said something.
But that's okay. That's part of the
trope. Death scene. Yeah. I'm so happy because it was bringing the whole movie together.
Yes.
But still, but even when he was killing the cameraman, spoilers, and the cameraman's trying to engage him, Leslie, you know me, we're buds.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't. I'm sorry, I gotta do my job. Yeah, yeah. But that was a case of, okay, it was a case of a strong script.
Yeah, it really
The writer really earned the right, and the director, I think it's the same guy anyway, earned the right to have that happen by really thinking it through and planning it and executing it well.
I agree.
I think the only way to now you get me to buy somebody carrying a camera lock is, and we talked about this, if it fit within the mythology of, why are you filming? I can't stop.
Yeah.
It becomes part of Ghastly Encounters, kind of,
yeah,
too.
Ghostly
Encounters, yeah, too, kind of had a reason.
Because they were a reality film show.
Yeah.
But there was also the creature, the entity itself required it.
Did you see Wreck 2?
I have. I don't remember it.
A lot of the footage in that was the policeman's, you know, camera footage.
Yeah.
They're helmet cameras. I just realized that you, the listener, cannot see the gesture that I'm making to indicate helmet cameras. But that is what I was trying to say.
But you know what? I mean, and also, there's just other countries where it's a lot more likely that they're going to have things filmed. Like, over in Russia,
there is the dash cams.
Because there is so much insurance theft and so much misuse that everybody has to record everything just to prove they're not in the wrong.
Well, now I want to see somebody do, you know, at least a short that's entirely from a dash cam.
Yes!
Well, I may do this. I need to think of a story that will work with it.
Well, in England, you have closed circuit cameras.
They've
already had plenty
of
things.
Let's go to a place
that.
Where it's very, very normal.
Because they read Orwell and was like, oh, okay, this is an instruction manual.
All right. So I think we all agree that Marked Ones could have been a great movie if they had dropped the camera at some point and just started showing it as a movie.
Marked Ones was a really good movie, I thought. I thought it was solidly decent.
Yeah.
But
it could have gotten to another level.
You're talking about wanting to explore the mythology of that more. The feeling that I had watching the ending of Marked Ones was like, you know, this would make a great video game. I would love to see, you know, a very expansive video game that lets the player find out more about the mythology and analyze it at their own pace.
So we just talked about one that that we've all seen. Because I know that there's going to be a couple of these that Jeff hasn't seen.
There's one I'm definitely bringing up.
Well, you guys haven't seen the TV shows I've been watching, so
let's get to there. I want to cover The Babadook.
Yes.
I want to
see that.
It's really so good. I don't know how and when, because it's still kind of doing the festival circuit right now. Michael and I saw it at SIFF. And it's a Seattle International Film Festival. For those who aren't local.
Yes.
It was just amazing. It was everything I wanted it to be. And, you know, I mean, I had just started listening about it because it was a woman writer and director. But it would have deserved mention and would have deserved accolades without having that being the why it was brought to my attention. It was so creepy. It's a mother and child and an evil storybook. And it's just, it was stylized and wonderful and creepy. And it did a kind of a game changer at the end where you're like, I was really, I'm like, how are they going to wrap this up?
Yeah. Normally,
how are they going to do this? And it went somewhere I didn't think it was going to go. And it was awesome.
Normally we can see endings coming. And this time, not at all.
To be honest, so I don't know if this is the movie where I started making that joke. Oh, with the little boy. And unfortunately, the mother becomes something that he fears at the end, too. I think I can say that without really spoiling too much.
That's implied by the trailer, I think.
There is a point where the little boy is scared, and I think I leaned over to Michael, and I'm like, call for your mom. Because she will come in there, and she will... like, if you are in a position where you can call for your mom... Yes. Your mom will go in there and, you know, you don't call the police.
For those of you listening on Fanboy News Network, this may be my first ever bleep.
Oh, right. Do you
I don't have an explicit marker on my show. I've been dying to do a bleep sound. I've been having something said. So here we go.
Invite us over. You'll have plenty of opportunities.
So I shouldn't say, like...
There we go.
is what you're telling me.
Ladies and gentlemen, my friends. Yeah, this is going to be fun.
So anyway, the Babadook, creepy, awesome, stylized, wonderful.
Yes. I also like my, good scene. My levels just spiked like crazy. You guys got really excited with the swearing.
We love swearing. Okay. That was one of our first decisions about the podcast. It's like, are we going to... Is it okay? Yeah.
You know, I don't have an explicit tag, but, you know, I just don't.
Yeah. We just went ahead and put an explicit tag on it just so
we'll just cover all the bases.
Just so we didn't have to think about it. And, you know, and also, you know, we're talking about horror movies. I don't really know that it's always going to be kid appropriate.
Sometimes you have to.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Having left one that I want to go back to one that we did. I want to touch on the sacrament.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ty West.
I was just thinking about that one.
Poor Sacrament had the bad luck to be seen on the same evening that we saw the Hannibal finale.
Yeah. So,
which we will be getting into later on.
But it was amazing. I loved that Ty West is completely willing to do something very, very different with every movie that he does. I have no idea how he got known, how he got.
Yeah.
I don't know what led up to him becoming a movie maker.
If I knew how he did it, I'd be out there trying to replicate it right now.
because the how many different places he's gone with his movies is really impressive, especially considering how much, you know, Hollywood wants to really shoehorn people.
Yeah. Pigeonhole them
into, you know, well, this is the one thing you make. I mean, look at Penelope Spheeris, who, you know, has very much two very different careers of making these amazing documentaries, and then she made Wayne's World and the Little Rascals movie. And
well, I was thinking of M. Night Shyamalan, who...
Possibly?
Well, no, because you talk about where Hollywood pigeonholes you.
Yes. Oh, yeah,
he had Sixth Sense, which was good. He had Unbreakable, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
And then after that, it started becoming...
And Lady in the Water.
Well, because I saw Signs, it's like, okay, Signs. It's kind of metaphor. But then I, you know, the moment he lost me was The Village when I predicted the twist from the trailer.
Me too! And I had friends that took me to a pre-screening of it, and I was mad.
I didn't predict the twist from the trailer because I didn't care. I had already... The exact point where I stopped caring about M. Night Shyamalan is like 3/4 of the way through Signs. You know, by the end of Signs, I'm like, fuck this movie, fuck anything you have to... I did not like this movie. Well, I do not wish to see anything else from the director.
I hate it. I saw Signs in the theater, which I can't say that for that many movies. I saw it in the theater and I hated it. And it grew on me.
Yeah.
There were parts of it that kind of stayed with me to where, you know, I ended up buying it used. Yeah, and I watched it a couple more times.
There's good chunks of it that I like. Like when they're first seeing the footage on TV that somebody caught of the alien. That is terrifying.
Where Joaquin Phoenix, like, losing his mind inside the closet as he's watching it.
Yeah.
Tinfoil. Didn't he have tinfoil?
I think
tinfoil hats involved.
But,
yes, there
but
were.
The ending is so, so dumb.
I can't say anything because I hated it.
Let's grant for a second that maybe these aliens are harmed by water. If we were invading a planet that was 3/4 covered with sulfuric acid, would we maybe wear some sort of protective gear when we went down and kicked some alien butt? I think we would.
Oh.
Joining us on our podcast is Leo.
Yes.
Who's
he has a lot of insight in his...
He's seen a lot of horror movies by this point.
Did you hate it?
We
just had a guest appearance by my husband who also hated Signs.
Well, yes. Again, it's if you really, really want to see a great analysis of all the issues with Signs, go on to thatguywiththeglasses.com, look up the Nostalgia Critic. He did a review of Signs where he really picks apart, including he takes the scene where they're hiding in the basement, and he starts... adding in dialogue for the aliens. Wood! Our one weakness! Why did we come to a planet full of wood and water?
Really briefly going back to the sacrament, what were your guys' thoughts on it?
The sacrament was fantastic.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Um, it sets up just a wonderful atmosphere of dread, and that's one thing that I think a lot of horror movies these days don't bother to do.
Yeah.
You know, they're just trying to just immediately, like, you know, jump scare you as fast as they can. This one just set up the situation that was just creepy wrong and stayed creepy wrong.
Yeah.
I felt like I was there in this compound with the lead characters, and I wanted to go home.
Yeah.
One of the complaints that I heard that you made was that it was telling pretty much everything almost exactly as it happened, so why make the movie?
Gosh. Leo the cat has just had
an affectionate yet clumsy cat.
Yes.
Yeah, well, he's 19 and a half, so sometimes he just falls down.
Yeah. Ancient kitty. Oh.
Having just watched a documentary on Jonestown.
Yeah.
Yes, a documentary.
Let her get through this.
Okay.
But the complaint of it being a retelling of history is not inaccurate. But again, I don't think I was as aware of that. I mean, I'm aware of the basic story of Jonestown.
Yeah.
But I think that this is a story that needs to be retold.
Yeah.
I think that there's enough younger people in the world who aren't as familiar that don't let this be a guideline. If this interests them enough to do more research on what's happened in our recent history, then good on it.
Well, I think the advantage it had was by doing a fictionalized version of Jonestown. There was a little bit of, are they going to exactly follow history?
Yeah.
What's going to happen? And it did allow you to have things like, you know, in the real event, those guys wouldn't have gotten out.
Yeah.
Based on what had happened.
People did get out.
Yeah, people did get out, but not...
I don't think these protagonists would have gotten out.
Yeah.
Perhaps not.
Yeah. It was a nice way of, okay, we can play a little fast and loose with the facts, because this is a fictionalized version of it. We can make it work for our narrative while still conveying the message of, this is very close to what actually happened.
I want to correct you here, actually, Jen. I have heard that complaint, but I didn't make that complaint.
Oh no! I didn't think I was.
Oh, I thought you did say that.
No, but you had told me of someone that had
maybe. Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
You were the sharer of information.
Yes. Because I was totally fine with it being based on real events for exactly the same reason you were.
No, but no, you had passed on that
somebody else had been. Yes.
That's
okay.
The only complaint that I really heard. Did you ever get to see Only Lovers Left Alive?
I did not. I'm waiting for it to come out on DVD to finally see
it. So here's the thing. Not horror.
Yeah.
Horror themes.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple of scenes that kind of edge in that direction, and then they don't.
But it's really good. It's really good. I loved it.
You see that a lot now where it's like, oh, we're playing with horror tropes, but we are in and of ourselves not a horror.
Exactly.
Walking Dead
or...
It's a soap opera with zombies.
You know, True Blood, which I'm not even watching this season.
Neither am I.
But it's...
I stopped halfway through last season. I just... we'll just say it's the flipping the table moment, and we will speak more clearly on this on the traditional...
But you know, I think now's a great time. I'd like to start talking about the TV shows.
Yeah,
this year, especially it's a great segue because we were just talking about The Sacrament, and like you said, we watched the season finale of Hannibal on the same night we watched Sacrament. So for the listeners, we watched almost the entire season together.
Yeah,
because it was on Friday nights when we get together for horror movies anyway.
And then we watched Hannibal.
Yeah, we got together one night at my sister's house, and her husband was issuing demerits if he made any sound during the show.
I earned a lot of demerits.
He was like Snape. It was amazing. I told him I called him Snape, and he, after he had said 10 points from House Harris to me recently. Yes. But, you know, so we watched that. It was a great, so we watched the show throughout, so we were kind of getting into the storylines together, watching it. And watching the amazing buildup of tension. And on the night of the finale, we watched Sacrament. Then we watched the finale.
And then we needed a hug.
And then at the end of the finale, we turned off And Michael looks at us and goes, we all look like we were hit by cars.
I think, honestly, that we just sat there for, like, 2 minutes in complete silence before I said that, is my memory of it.
And we're driving home. I was giving Michael a ride home.
Yeah.
And he says, what'd you think? I said, well, after watching The Sacrament, I could still believe there was hope in the universe.
Right. Yes. And Hannibal, no. It's gone. Yeah. No faith in humanity left. So, no.
Yeah, it was very powerful. But here's the thing, I think, that worked with Hannibal and works with most of the good horror-based TV shows. Mm-hmm. And that is, all of the ones that are successfully doing it are, at most, 13 episodes.
Yeah.
I am really fond of the tight season, 10 episode, 13 episode. Yeah. I'm even completely fine with big breaks, like a one a year, short season, if it means we're going to get the quality that we're getting with True Detective, with Hannibal, with Game of Thrones. It's really.
I need to finish it.
It's pretty amazing.
Exactly. Well, it doesn't
American
allow
for, Horror Story.
Yeah, it doesn't allow for filler.
Yeah. No.
You have to tell your story. But it also means Hannibal could not have worked if there had been filler episodes, because you would have lost the tension.
Yeah.
With Hannibal, they were, each episode was like, oh my goodness, what are they doing now? They're building the tension like crazy. What is Will actually doing? It was great. And yeah, it hit us like a ton of bricks, because Hannibal obeyed the first rule of horror that I learned from Stephen Barnes, who cribbed it from Stephen King. And that is, horror works best when you care about the fates of the characters
Absolutely.
You're watching.
Absolutely.
And that finale of Hannibal, we cared deeply about all those characters.
Including Hannibal.
Including Hannibal.
It was heartbreaking. There's one particular moment, and I'm not going to spoil exactly what it is, but where Hannibal comes to a particular realization, and you see it on his face.
And you literally see his heartbreak.
Yeah, yeah. It was deeply, deeply moving, and it's, a moment with this horrible serial killer, psychopath, and you feel for him.
He's just hungry.
We cared, so we had such investment, we were devastated by that ending. It was horror at its best.
It really was.
And on network television, of all places.
It shocks me every time we're sitting there watching it that we're watching it on NBC.
Well, right now, I would argue we're seeing so much good horror on TV, and I'm watching a lot of it. I think
we're seeing
happening,
better horror on television than we are in the movie theaters.
Well, because they can tell a longer story.
Yeah.
They can really build things up like a novel, and then deliver that punch or whatever at the end. You get time to know the characters, and thus their fates matter to you.
Yeah.
And when it's done well, like on Hannibal, and your investment becomes so high, you're hit by it really hard. I am so glad that we found out Hannibal gets a third season.
Because you wonder.
Well, here's the thing.
Where do we go from here?
I'm going to quickly plug another podcast. There's a great podcast called The Nerdist Writers Panel. It's from Nerdist Industries. It's hosted by a writer named Ben Blacker, who's the creator of the Thrilling Adventure Hour with Ben Acker. He writes comic books, but he wrote for Supernatural and some other shows. And he gets writers, and a lot of them are TV writers, and he had Brian Fuller on. I highly recommend listening to the Brian Fuller episode. It was recorded before the season premiered. But he's talking about what it was like putting it together, how he could. It was because he's also the showrunner.
The work of that season was amazing. It opened and ended with the same, almost the same moment of time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we never got a moment in. Was it 10 episodes? How many episodes is Hannibal?
I think it was 13 this season.
We never caught a breath the entire time, and that fight scene. I don't think it's they had it in every promo for the show. The fight scene between Mads Mikkelsen and
Lawrence Fishburne.
And Lawrence Fishburne was so beautiful and powerful and terrifying. And it almost elevated the entirety of that show for a moment in the way that in District B-13 a man running away from, you know, using parkour to run away yeah. from a group of people trying to capture or and kill him, became like this car chase in human form. This fight became this epic battle between these giants.
I'm going to make a possibly ridiculous comparison, but I'm for that. I like ridiculous. It kind of reminded me of the battle between the Enterprise and the Reliant in Wrath of Khan.
Oh.
You know, in that same yeah. sense of scope that you're talking. You see what I'm getting at? Okay, yeah. good. I thought you were going to look at me like you are completely insane and
oh, not no. making any sense.
All right.
You know. So yeah, that's good. But the other things we're seeing right now, I mean, it's maybe not quite as intense horror as Hannibal, but, and this was from last year, but it's coming back. Sleepy Hollow.
Also did the short season.
I've only seen the first episode and I really loved it, but I'm too much of a cheap, broke ass punk to actually, you know, yeah. watch the whole series on Amazon Prime.
But again, no filler. It's a lighter show. Than Hannibal, obviously, but it yeah. took advantage. But
really took a backseat. It's all we made the investment mm-hmm. a couple years ago to really upgrade our TiVos to where I have the Uber Duber can flex its arm and lift my house kind of TiVo. I think it does like over 300 hours of HD. So I mean, we literally can film season or catch seasons
mm-hmm.
and watch them next year.
And there's something to be said for binge watching. I mean, that's yeah. why I'm watching Sons of Anarchy
but
right now.
One day you're eventually just going to have racks of hard drives in your home.
Could happen. But
I haven't seen a lot of this. Television just took a backseat to everything else this year.
Well, I'd really like to plug a couple of the shows I was watching this yeah. year. Everyone talks about American Horror.
I'm waiting for you
Horror.
To keep talking about.
I'm getting there. That's where I'm going. But I want the American Horror Story because they had the brilliance, and I love that. HBO went, hey, they're smart people. Let's copy yeah. this for True Detective.
Yeah.
The whole idea of we're going to tell a story.
Having guest stars that are amazing.
And it's going to end.
Yeah.
And then the next series isn't even going to be the same characters.
Yeah.
And that has worked so well for America. Now, it had a weak season.
And
the second season was weak.
But you know what?
But it was still enjoyable.
Yes. I watched that in a binge because I skipped straight to Coven. Watched the entirety, and then went back and watched, in a pretty quick fashion, watched...
the first two seasons?
The second season. So we watched that first.
Okay.
First season of Hannibal, I binge-watched that.
I don't know how you did that.
And I'm really glad I did it, but I do not recommend it to anyone else.
There are just shows that I think are just too weighty.
I lived inside that show for the course of about 4 or 5 days.
Wow.
Is what it felt like. And it was a great experience.
It's a great ride if you can handle it.
Yeah, absolutely. But do not try. The only other time in my life I can think of that this was a really bad idea was I tried binge watching the first season of Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, jeez.
And 9 episodes in, I called a friend of mine who had loaned me the box set, and I was like, please tell me it gets less depressing before the end of the season. And he sounded genuinely concerned. He was like, I don't think you should be watching this much of it at once. Like, I had passed the LD50 on Battlestar Galactica.
But again, American Horror Story, I mean, they do good, but
yeah.
they do good work. They get great actresses and actors.
Yeah.
They have built a troupe that's, I'm looking forward to seeing what the heck they're going to be doing with next season. Because they're adding Michael Chiklis next season. And so...
I'm a big old time circus and freaks fan, so that's, you know, I literally have, there is a section of my bookshelf, you know, I have my movies and my all my, you know, fiction, and I have a circus and circus freaks section.
But the other show, now this was on Showtime, Showtime had Dexter, that was their big entry into the sweepstakes of this kind of stuff earlier.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know... I like the first.
I don't think I like it.
Mm-hmm. I like the first season, which was modeled off the first book.
Yeah.
But it diverted from the books, and I didn't read the third book either because it got weird as well. But what
did you start getting kind of supernatural?
Yes, that's what I didn't like.
Yeah.
But speaking of which, this season Showtime had Penny Dreadful.
Yeah.
And I know neither of you have seen it yet.
But I know you really want to see it.
I really, really want to.
And I do want to see it.
I really, really like. So Penny Dreadful is the massive crossover idea. It's most people would think of it as League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah, it's the horror version of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Whereas I
like the idea, it just wasn't done very well.
And I immediately think
the comic actually is
Wold Newton, which is was the story game
that needs to be my gateway comic. You're not making a happy face.
But with Penny Dreadful, I think why Penny Dreadful succeeded is even though it's this crossover of all the Victorian horror, a lot of the characters are original. Victor Frankenstein is one of the main characters, so not all of them are original, but one of the lead characters is Mina Marie's father. The other two characters are original creations, Ethan Hawke's character and Eva Green's character. I think Eva Green has done some amazing work in film.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of great movies. This was the best she's ever done, was this show. And I kind of think she knew this was where she had to go all out.
Sure.
And the way they built it, first off, I think one of the best takes on Dr. Frankenstein ever. They get into a lot of emotional core of, why did he do these experiments? Why has he reacted the way he has? And what's the emotional toll been on him?
Okay.
Best relationship with the creature ever. In that, how they explore it. But also, just the arc with the characters, because there's so many different things going on. You've got the vampires, you've got demons involved, whether there's a demonic possession storyline. You've got Dorian Gray as a main character,
right.
And he's throwing randomly into this as you watch his emotional arc. But you're back to, I cared about these characters, and the second to the last episode, they only did 8 episodes this season, so episode 7, they did a plot line they had been building up to the entire season, but it was so harrowing.
That's tempting then.
Yeah, it was back. It was back to that Hannibal finale. I care about these characters. They're going through hell. You're seeing them being drained by this one experience. And at one point, it hit which you guys have seen enough horror movies with me. It hit a point where I almost felt the need to look away.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. All right. Wow.
And even what was happening, it wasn't necessarily the most grotesque thing ever.
Yeah.
But it was watching this really bad thing happening to this person.
Yeah.
And I felt the need momentarily to, I almost looked away. And that never happens to me in horror movies, but that happened. And so, great story. And they do have one, I'm not going to spoil anything, but they have one thing that's in a final episode reveal. That if you're genre savvy at all, you have figured out in the first episode.
Oh, okay.
And they just tease it throughout the whole damn series. It has to do with Ethan Hawke's character.
Okay.
They tease it, and the whole time you're going, well, clearly this is what's happening. And they pay it off in the last episode, near the end of the episode.
Nice.
But in such a satisfying fashion that you're like, all right, I'm in. And it's got a great cast. I mean, Timothy Dalton, Eva Green, Ethan Hawke, Billy Piper.
Is she Mina Harker?
No, she's an original character.
Oh, okay. All right.
She's one of the original characters. And yet you also have Harry Treadwell, who's not a well-known actor, plays Victor Frankenstein. And I'm blanking on the name of the actor plays the creature, but he played M's assistant in all of the James Bond movies with Daniel Craig. So a character everyone has seen.
Yeah.
But no one ever pays attention to because he's just M's right hand man.
I got no idea
who you mean. Yeah, it's you're an invisible guy, but wow, as Frankenstein's creature in this show, I'm saying clearly you need to be doing more work, sir.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was that, and then the other series that in a house with cats
and husbands.
And
you have more than one.
Well, no, he's a husband anyway.
That I've just started watching, it's only just started, is The Strain.
Okay.
This is the Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, I want to see that. It's, sitting on my table.
Well, and it's, he wrote a book.
I did not like the book. I got a third of the way into it. But the idea, the premise for this, The Strain, was for it to be a TV series, but everyone passed on it, so we wrote the book.
Okay.
And then, I think there's been a couple.
It's a series of 3 books.
Yeah. And, got approval to to do the series, and so now it's getting expressed in the format he originally wanted it to be.
That's great.
So that's okay. Gotta be good.
And again, you got great actors. You've got Corey Stoll from the first season of House of Cards is the lead, and you've got David Bradley from he was Finch in the Harry Potter movies. He played William Hartnell in the documentary about the early days of Doctor Who. So really, and he plays a major character in it. You've got Sean Astin playing.
Really?
Yeah, and it's an interesting part for him. I don't want to give any spoilers. Right. But it is, if you've watched other things that Del Toro has done with vampires, it is clearly him finally getting to express his full idea of what vampires should be like. And it's just amazing. But again, it's one of those, you watch it, and even though it's on FX, you still go, wow, I thought they were getting away with crap on Hannibal.
Oh.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay.
All right. Put that on the list.
Yeah.
So yeah, if we're going above and beyond, you know, making somebody's throat into a violin, I think...
there is some truly disturbing things. But something you had said got me thinking, there was one other thing, it's not quite horror, but it's really close, and it's something we're all familiar with, but I don't think we talked about a lot. I was listening to it on the way over here, Welcome to Night Vale.
Yeah.
And even though it's one of those shows, what genre is it? It's kind of comedy, but it's definitely got strong horror elements. I was thinking about it because you talked about Number of Stations, and they did an episode about Number of Stations.
That was really, it was a heartbreaking episode.
It was.
Oh, man, I haven't heard that one yet.
Oh, really well, good. Worse, when they were at Emerald City Comic Con this year, they did a special live performance for the convention at the convention.
Right.
They staged that episode live because they had Molly Quinn, and they added some characters for interaction. So you actually got to see Molly's face doing that performance. It was amazing and heartbreaking.
Wow. It's going to make me cry.
Yeah.
Because it was a really touching episode.
Well, it makes me also wonder if they're going to go back to that, because Molly Quinn has really become invested in doing these things.
Yeah.
She's,
there you go.
She's almost a regular now on Thrilling Adventure Hour. And, you know, but it's listening to this horror, the idea that we don't have to, everyone thinks horror movies, but the forms are horror. As you two know, I'm really into audio dramas right now. And if you look at people who are doing audio dramas, 90% of them are horror. I mean, that's me pulling the number out of my butt.
Sure.
But if you look at them, you're hard-pressed to find something that's not horror.
Okay. Well, I think, you know, that kind of drama, it, you know.
I mean, my friend that has been teaching me about audio drama since I'm trying to create one of my own, her main show is a horror show, 19 Octane Boulevard, and her side project, Bingo the Birthday Clown.
No.
It's amazing how people get creeped out about clowns.
I do want to kind of, like, because I do have a couple more movies
that I want to
cover.
Yeah, likewise.
And this one I just want to cover because, you know, if you can't be a good example, be a horrible warning. Deliver Us from Evil.
Terrible.
It's not good. I can't recommend it. And I think that's all I'm going to say on that, because it's just not good.
Well, they really tried to play it up as, this is the big new horror movie.
Yeah, they did.
It really wants to be this generation's The Exorcist.
It really did.
And it's really not.
It's not good.
The Exorcist is still this generation's The Exorcist.
Did you ever get to go see Oculus?
I did not. Like I say, I've not seen a lot of movies in the theater, period, lately.
Definitely want to cover Oculus. Everybody in it did a really good job.
Karen Gillan was amazing.
Amazing. The set... My absolute favorite part in the entire movie was they had two timelines that were happening on top of each other.
Yes.
That was done in such an amazing, impressive way. And it literally wasn't anything I'd ever seen done in a way that worked so well. I ended up wanting a little bit more from the movie than I got. But if they were to do anything else in this world that they've created, I would happily watch it in a heartbeat, because I love the story of the mirror. I love the backstories they told us of. Like, I would love to see where those went. I know that in the beginning when they were throwing out ideas for this, they were talking about doing an anthology. Film, and I think it would...
That'd be good.
I think the stories would go really well. I was a little disappointed, but all in all, I'd say I did like
it. Well, and also, you mainly just thought it was too bleak for your taste, if I remember right.
Yeah, but there's ones that are really bleak that, they just have to earn it.
Yeah.
And not feel like they're doing a disservice to the characters.
Yeah. I'm happier with a bleak ending if it feels like the characters didn't do their best to get out of the situation. And the characters that died in this movie, I don't feel like they should have, because they were really, they brought their A-game to trying to survive. I don't know.
And they still didn't.
Yeah.
The other movie that I wanted to bring up, which I know you have one too.
Yeah,
I have Under the Skin with Scarlett Johansson. Yes.
I've heard so many different things about it. And the problem is I'm not
sure. I've also talked to people who have read the book, and it's good in how it strays from the book. I haven't, but I would be interested in reading it. Mm. I just thought it was really beautifully done. I love the touch of a lot of the men that they have Scarlett Johansson as this alien character who is driving this van/truck around Scotland, and she stops and is trying to entice these men to come with her. They're almost all non-actors. They are men that she literally, in her costume, playing this character, attempted to pick up, and once they got them and had some conversation, they told them they were doing a movie, and were they willing to continue acting in the movie?
Yeah, that's kind of amazing.
And it creates this really raw honesty of their interaction, and it's beautiful. And she is very amazingly alien and very separate from the human race, and she shows it in so many ways. In ways that almost make you laugh, and in ways that are absolutely horrifying.
Right.
And then it's just, I both want to see it again, and I'm almost a little scared to watch it again because it's a hard watch.
Well, I haven't seen it, so when it comes out, maybe that becomes one of our Friday night movies.
I bought it. It's on video on demand.
Oh, okay.
Like, so I've already.
There you go. It probably should be one of our Friday night movies because. That's, like I said, it's one I was certainly interested in.
A lot of these movies that are coming out this year, I mean, I already own them. Well, I mean, The Sacrament I rented.
Mm-hmm.
But, they're not getting traditional theatrical release. It's too expensive.
Are we back to the point where studios don't want to take a chance on horror movie theatrical releases, do you think?
Because
I've seen this happen before.
If you are doing something that is part five in an established movie franchise, or if you're James Wan, they'll give you money. But a lot of the people who are, these movies that are coming out, like I don't, Ty West, I don't know where he gets his financing. I don't know, because he doesn't seem to be going the traditional route, but I don't know how he is doing it. And a lot of these, another one that I was going to mention, but not in the, oh my God, everybody should see this. It was interesting. It's called Almost Human. It is a, alien abduction story where the person comes back and doesn't seem quite right. But let's see, The Babadook was completely made by the, Banshee chapter, The Babadook. Almost Human were, if I'm not mistaken, completely made by the writer, directors,
right,
and found some form of distribution, and did not get any kind of theatrical release. But they're getting talked about, and I don't know if they're doing anything else. Jug Face that I saw last year was Chad something Crinkle, and as far as I'm aware, completely did it on his own, and I don't know if he's doing anything else. I don't know if they find opportunities to do anything else.
Okay, we've never talked about it here, but we talked amongst ourselves.
Yeah.
Because of the nature of video on demand and the new distribution channels.
It's a messy business.
It's a messy business, but it does mean that these creators have the ability to make product and get it seen without having to go through the traditional methods.
Here's the problem.
They don't get paid.
They don't get paid because the companies that are doing this, like Netflix, is like, you pretty much have to sell your soul. Like, you get nothing. Amazon and Netflix will not tell you your numbers for how many people have watched your movie.
For Netflix, that doesn't surprise me. For Amazon, it does.
Video on demand is really, really nebulous.
Yeah. They provide a halfway decent amount of information for authors, you know, using using the Kindle publishing platform. Not as much as I'd like. I want all of
I might be going off of information strictly for Netflix and putting it under a huge umbrella. Yeah. But from what I've gathered,
that would be insanely frustrating.
It would. You don't know how many people are watching it because it's all like, here's the money you get from how many people have watched it, which is pennies.
Yeah.
Well, and that's where I'm hoping as we see more of these crowdfunding methods.
But still, it's the distribution portion that's, you know, it's all fine and good for you to get your movie made,
but I'm
if you're sitting in a garage.
I'm talking about the other end now, when we're seeing things like Patreon. Yeah. And I don't know if there's going to be a Patreon-like thing for, all right, I've made this thing, I want to get it out, but I'd like help, because, I did this great work, and I'd like to be able to, pay my crew.
Yeah.
That
kick finisher.
It's
the biggest expense a lot of times is finishing it. I mean, you've got the footage, and then what do you do then?
Oh, this is a movie I've been waiting for over a year for them to finish. But the Kickstarter failed, and that was, it had nothing to do with horror, but it was a pulp hero thing. And I backed it, but it didn't make its funding, so. Yeah. And they're talking about trying to rework, maybe try and launch another project on it. But yeah, finishing is hard.
Local director Don Thacker had an excellent point on a panel at Crypticon. He was saying that, if you run a crowdfunding campaign for your movie and it fails, good luck getting traditional investors after that. Because they'll look at, your failed Kickstarter and be like, there wasn't enough of an audience out there for this. Why should we give you any money for something that's already failed once? And I thought that was a really excellent point.
Yeah. It's a risk.
Yeah.
It's a big risk. The thing is, these days, if you want to get anything made, or you want to break into an industry, you've got to at least take the chance of creating something yourself, because
absolutely
no one...
There are no apprenticeship opportunities.
I was going to say, one of the movies I'm really looking forward to this year is a horror movie that it was, even though it's kind of that one that maybe would fall under the radar normally, it happened to have the right combination of names attached to get a release, and that's Horns.
Yeah.
Yeah, I desperately want to see that because I'm a huge fan of the novel.
Right.
Yeah.
But part of it is, all right, Daniel Radcliffe stepped up and said, I want to do this.
Yeah.
So they've got Radcliffe's name. It's the same reason that Woman in Black happened.
Right.
Because Radcliffe got involved, and he alone is enough of a name for an advertising campaign.
Yeah.
And I understand Woman in Black did very well. And Horns, you have the added factor of Joe Hill is a rising star in the literary world.
Right, yeah. Absolutely.
And as people are realizing who his dad is, even though that never gets used in any of the ad campaigns, there's becoming an idea that, this is Stephen King's kid.
Yeah.
And,
And he's going to tell you a scary story.
Yep.
Yeah, and I have not read Horns. Actually, that's on my list. It's literally the next thing I want to read.
I that's another one that I would have to go back and forth on as to whether I think it's horror.
Certainly elements.
Yeah, as opposed to his novel after that, Nosferatu, was definitely a terrifying.
We talked about that in our first podcast together.
Yeah. Yeah. Having read that, I'm not looking forward to Christmas this year, because I'm sure that anything Christmas-related will suddenly running screaming.
So what was the one that you said you saw on your own?
The one that I saw on my own that I'm looking forward to showing you guys at some point is Stage Fright.
Ah, yes.
Which is another little indie film.
Names have been changed.
Yes.
The victims, but the...
But the songs are
musical
performed.
Scene.
Yeah, exactly.
Musical numbers are exactly as they happened.
Yeah. I completely love it. It's a musical. It's a comedy. It's a horror film. It does, I thought, really pretty well at all of these things.
Yeah, It's going to be a Friday Night Horror movie.
It's got Meatloaf in it.
Because why not?
Because why not? It's made clearly by people who were fond of 80s teen slasher movies and who were fond of Italian giallo films. There's references, you know, like little visual throwaway gags to just horror film icons in it. I thought the songs were great. I just completely loved this movie from start to finish, and I'm going to bring it here, and these two are probably going to hate it, and I'm going to go home and cry.
Oh, it seems unfair.
You know, oddly, okay. We always say that. I think you guys are going to hate this, and no, we loved it.
Well, yeah, but then there's Houseu, which they will never, ever forgive me for showing them Houseu.
And yet our friend Pleiades loved it.
Yeah, I knew she would.
So.
Me not saying anything.
Yeah, so this is Jen being really, what the hell was that creepy little drawing you just looked past?
Oh, they're techno drawings.
Your child is not supposed to be terrifying. I told you.
She's supposed to be adorable. She's supposed
to be adorable.
Have you met the child? any child that refers to Jillian as her auntie is going to be terrifying.
Yeah, okay.
Sometimes I really get the feeling that I'm so glad that Jillie is still here, but if she weren't, I'd feel like she was the next coming of Jillie, because it does really feel a lot of the time like I've given birth to a tiny little Jillian Winters, which has its upsides and downsides.
And the Jillian
petticoats must have been hard to deal with.
What was that?
I said the petticoats must have been hard to deal with.
Twirly dresses.
Twirly dresses.
Have you seen that? Wednesday dress she has?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
This was her drawing of a pony, which is terrifying.
This is
creature. Sure.
That is a great alien.
You know, okay. Listeners on the podcast.
In her room at night.
I think you should be glad.
Trying to recover that memory. Yes. I'm telling you.
I want you to submit that to that company that makes dolls.
I don't
want to
see that in a doll form. That's terrifying. Oh, this one's even.
She's got a gray alien. Anything else we want to talk about in film? Before we go? Because I think we've hit that point. We're over an hour. I think we're punchy.
I think we're done.
All right.
You know, I don't even want to really talk about what's coming up. You know, we're coming up on Prime Horror Season, September, and I am so glad that Halloween has turned into a multi-month.
Yes.
I want to see it. If I have to put up with Christmas starting in October,
all I'll say is this. If you guys let me know you're going to horror movies ahead of time, I might go with you.
Oh,
well, I did tell you about the Banshee chapter. I said it was
that one, and I couldn't make that one.
Yeah.
I just couldn't make you. Yeah, that was. But you know, there's other times.
Actually, there really haven't been.
Well, there's not because we're talking about not a lot of the horror gets out in the theaters now. October, maybe there'll be a nice film festival. There's one thing.
A lot of the ones
Sarah
that Jenna
Walmart just shut down for like a month or so because they're doing like a huge refurbishing and. I have been told last October.
So long as it's open by October.
Yeah.
We're going to put a hurting on
somebody. You know, there's two things I want to touch on before we completely shut down for the day, and things we might talk more extensively about at a future date. One is the Great Horror Campout.
I don't want to do that.
I don't want to do it either. I just want to talk about it.
Okay.
And
people seem to love it.
Halloween Horror Nights.
Yes.
And this is, so the Great Horror Campout, for those of you who don't know, is an event where people go out camping in the woods and they're going to be it's going to be a simulated horror movie. But people have to sign waivers.
Because they're going to assault you.
Pretty much.
And
pretty much the waiver says if they break your leg, it's your fault.
Yeah.
Like you are signing that you are not going to take
it. You have to sign an agreement that you won't fight back, that you won't run, and that you're okay with anything they do to you. Which, I'm sorry, my instincts wouldn't allow that to happen.
So, if any of you are wondering what lawyer
signed off on this?
So, my feelings on this are exactly what I say when I'm watching a movie and it's done nothing for me. Like, imagine what I'm saying in my head right now.
But with Halloween Horror Nights, it's an event I've always had great love for.
It's fantastic. I've been once.
I've never been to anything like that. I want to.
One of these, you know, if we ever get a chance, if someday in the future, if the stars align, I would want us all to go down. And experience, because there's nothing like that here. The reason I was thinking about it, and this goes back to the very beginning of this episode, one of the street events they're doing this year is going to be based on Face Off, the sci-fi show about practical makeup art.
Yeah.
They're going to have the creatures be the creations of the Face Off artists.
Cool.
I know that's a thing, but whenever I hear the title, I go back to that movie.
Nicolas Cage, John Travolta.
And then I get disappointed that that's not what we're talking about, because that was such a terrible movie that I loved it.
But I do, just again, because I've been to the event, and I think it's, I want to talk about the horror maze, the horror house experience, but I think we, since we're well over an hour now, and
maybe.
So, yeah, we've
hit, done with you.
We've hit an hour and 15 minutes, which for me is amazing, because I tend to do 20-minute episodes.
And this is pretty much our standard length, because we can't shut up. So
for,
there's two of us, I think.
You know, I think this is going to, I was originally thinking, oh, I'm just going to break, nah, I'm gonna put it up as one episode.
Yay.
I have to debate whether or not I'm going to bleep the cursing or not. Probably, because I don't have I don't have the explicit tag on mine, which means I'm going to go through this again. Yeah, it's going to be fun. So anyway, as we wrap up, if you have thoughts out there in the listening audience and want to drop us a line,
Call now. No, wait.
I can be reached at Caliban@fanboynewsnetwork.com, or for the version of this that's going up on my site, you can leave comments in the section at fanboynewsnetwork.com.
And you can also leave comments for the version that's up on our site at don'treadthelatin.com. You can reach us over Facebook,
Tumblr.
Yeah.
Instagram, Twitter, all those.
You guys
Fubler.
Got
on the Instagram? Well, I've got one.
Okay. Fubler and Bleasel and...
Yes.
And
you know, I do have a Twitter account that I never push, which is Caliban1227.
That's true.
Yeah. All of my Tumblr stuff just reposts.
Well, yeah, that's most of my Twitter is that, or reblogs of weird things I see.
Anyway. I love my Instagram because it's like, here's the horror movie we're watching. Here's my cat. And my child.
Yep. That's it in a nutshell.
It's my child who is the drawer of terrifying drawings.
Apparently.
So yeah. as our last thing, what's our next horror movie on Friday night?
I don't know.
I have family coming in, so.
Oh, right. I think there will be one,
but it will. I will be saying.
At some point, I think we need to do a something about you know the highlights of.
I made my mom and my teens watch all of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, so maybe it'll be Dream Warriors. I don't know. I'm not making
any
promises.
I really
want
to see that again later.
Anyway, thank you all for listening out there in the podcasting world. We appreciate it, and I'm sure we'll all get together and do another joint episode sometime soon.
Yes.
Don't forget to go to iTunes and vote for our podcast and tell everyone how insanely awesome we are.
Because we are!
That could be fun. All right. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
This program is a co-production by Don't Read the Latin and Fanboy News Network, and is copyright 2014 to Don't Read the Latin and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from The Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.